Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Shira Springer. We want to talk now about some of our favorite reads of the year. From fiction to nonfiction, we're going to round up the stories and essays that enriched us in 2016 and the pieces we couldn't stop sharing with our friends. To do that, I'm joined now in studio by two local authors. Jabari Asim is the editor-in-chief of The Crisis, the journal of the NAACP. He's also a professor of creative writing at Emerson College and author of several books, including Preaching to the Chickens, the story of young John Lewis. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And Laura Vandenberg, a lecturer in fiction at Harvard University. Her latest book is Find Me. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you.
And listeners, we want to hear from you in this conversation, too. What were your favorite books of the year? What was overhyped and what was overlooked? Were you rereading old favorites or finding a new genre to love? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So before we begin all our recommendations, I want to recommend the books by each of you. Jabari, we spoke to you about your latest children's book, Preaching to the Chickens, and your novel, Only the Strong. But remind us what that's about.
Only the Strong is set in the 1970s in a fictional Midwestern city that's inspired by St. Louis. And it tells three interwoven stories of three different characters.
And Laura, tell us about your latest book, Find Me.
Find Me is a novel set in the aftermath of an epidemic that destroys memory, and it concerns a young woman named Joy, who is at the start of the novel in a hospital, and then leaves and journeys across America in search of her mother.
I understand you're working on another novel. Recently went to Cuba for a research trip. How much can you reveal
yes.
about that new work?
That's
I know
correct.
That's a thing with
Do
authors.
Tell.
They don't often want to reveal what they're working on.
Yeah, you know, right. There's the fear that if you talk about it, it just will sort of go up like smoke. And
exactly,
that actually
yes.
happened to me this summer. So it's deep in my superstition. But yeah, it's a novel that concerns the first horror film to ever be made in Cuba. And so I did my second research trip in December.
Fascinating. I'm looking forward to that. But let's start with the number one recommendations on your list for this year. If listeners can pick only one read from 2016, what should it be? I know it's
I
see your face, Jabari. You're like,
what?
only one. Maybe a little leeway. Maybe we can give you two.
Am I going first?
Yes, you're going first, Jabari. Even though you look mortified at picking only one.
Well, I want to pick one children's book first. Can
okay.
I do that?
You can do whatever you want.
Okay, it's called Freedom in Congo Square by Carol Boston Weatherford, and it's illustrated by Greg Christie. And Greg Christie has won pretty much every award there is for illustration. And Carol Boston Weatherford wrote a wonderful picture book about Fannie Lou Hamer last year. And this book is about Congo Square, which was the area of New Orleans where both free blacks and enslaved blacks could get together and create culture that ultimately led to jazz and some of the other things that are now so much a part of American culture. And I guess for nonfiction, I'm going to go with The World in Flames by Gerald Walker, who's a colleague of mine at Emerson College. And it's a fascinating memoir about growing up in a religious sect that believed the world would end, I believe, in 1972. I hope I have that right. And it's also about growing up black, and it's also about growing up.
Laura? I'll give you two if you need them.
Okay. I will take you up on those two. So my first recommendation would be a novel called The Vegetarian by Han Kang. And this book has the most sort of straightforward premise. And I remember reading the jacket copy and thinking, you know, what could this author do with this? A lot, it turns out. But a woman stops eating meat and announces that she is a vegetarian, and it traces the consequences of that through three different perspectives: her husband, her brother-in-law, and her sister. So the vegetarian, the titular vegetarian, never actually narrates, and it is, I think, just an extraordinary portrait of sort of freedom, violence, femininity, misogyny. It's a radical book, I think, in every sense of the word. And it was one of the most viscerally memorable reads for me for 2016, for sure. So if I had to only recommend one book, as painful as it would be to leave off the others, that is, I would go with A Vegetarian. But since you very charitably gave me two.
It is the season of charity.
Yeah.
So that, I think since A Vegetarian's been getting a lot of attention, rightfully so, my second choice is going to be a debut story collection called Heartbreaker. By a writer named Maurice Meyer. And these stories, there's actually, I think, some overlap in some ways between the stories in Heartbreaker and the thematic concerns of The Vegetarian. But these stories are surprising and inventive and dark and weird and funny. And I can't wait to see what this author does next.
Listeners, we want to know what's number one on your list. So please join the conversation. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. I want to take a little bit of a step back. I'm curious, with both of you, what kind of writing draws you in? What makes you stick with something to the end? So we can start with Jabari. We'll start with you again.
Keep picking on Jabari. Wow.
I like this time to stall.
I really like story. I think characters are very important, but I like to feel compelled to turn the page. I like literary fiction that moves. So I like pacing. I like action. And I just want to be drawn in, and I want to be so immersed in the world that the fiction creates that I don't want to leave it. And when I put the book down, I want to be disoriented. I'm going to go, what? Where am I? What were we talking about?
Yeah, I too sort of crave that feeling of disorientation and that sense too that you look up from the pages and the world is slightly altered and askew and feels changed by virtue of having read, whatever it is that you've just read. But I think, honestly, I think some of what draws me to fiction is ineffable. And I love it. I love that. That sometimes it's a turn of phrase on the first page. It's a voice. It's a quality of landscape. And it's just this sort of, it's this embrace. And it's like, I think like any other kind of attraction in a sense where there is this quality of mystery to it. But I think one thing that sort of reliably pulls me into a work is voice and feeling like there's a really specific and singular voice speaking to me as a reader and that they're speaking to me with some measure of urgency.
Did you guys notice, and I'll start with you, Laura, did you notice any particular trends this year, types of writing you were seeing a lot, genres that were sort of rising to the top of bestseller lists? Was there anything that caught your eye that was unique about the writing we were seeing this year and the books that many people were embracing?
Oh my goodness. Well, I think that one thing, and I don't know if it's a trend that's specific to this year necessarily. I think it's been a sort of ongoing trend. But one trend that's been deeply pleasing for me as a reader is that I think in fiction, at least, the sort of distinctions between genre, is this a mystery? Is it literary fiction? Is it science fiction? Have broken down a little bit in a way that I think is really positive. So, I Helen Oyeyemi's, I'm sneaking another recommendation in there. What is not yours is not yours. Her story collection was another book that I was eager to recommend. And she's someone who plays with different genres, I think, or beckons to different genres to really wonderful effect. And so I love this idea that, there's not necessarily this clean divide between literary and genre, but in fact, the whole notion of genre is really fluid.
I'm going to give you a little more time to think, Jabari, because we have Tom from Medford on the line who wants to talk about his favorite read of the year. Tom, are you there?
Hi, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing? What was the book that captured your attention this year and was your favorite?
So it's the third in a trilogy by Pierce Brown.
Tell me a little bit about that book.
It's called Morning Star. And it's basically set in a future society where all the classes are broken down into colors, and there's the lowest reds in the bottom, and they're miners on the planet Mars. And I won't give away anything more, but it's going to be made into a feature film in a few years, so I think it's going to be worth checking out.
Wow, that sounds like an incredible plot. Jabari, going back to you, what trends did you see this year? What was popping up on your radar?
Well, I think, you know, just to pick up on what Laura was saying, we're certainly seeing that, like, within our MFA program, this willingness to break down the traditional divisions in terms of genre. We're having a lot of discussions in which we say things like Toni Morrison's Beloved is a ghost story. Right. It's also it's literary fiction, but it's also a ghost story. Right. So we're looking at these different elements. And it makes me think of, you know, Duke Ellington was resistant to the idea of categorization in music. Right. He didn't want to talk about whether that was jazz or symphonic. He just said there's two types. There's good and bad. And I think, you know, fiction and nonfiction, just literature in general, while I'm hesitant to be so judgmental as to dismiss things as bad, I think it does often come down to how does it engage you? How does it grip you as a reader? And that should be the final determinant of what it is.
I want to take a turn here to nonfiction and non-books. In your list, Laura, you mentioned Masha Gessen's essay. It's called Autocracy, Rules for Survival. And it seems like with the politically contentious season we've had that people would want to read to relax, but maybe not. Maybe they're looking for some insight, something to hold on to and explain the political climate that we're in. I know I dived into Hillbilly Elegy because I was, like, I think like a lot of people was trying to gain some understanding of the lives of poor white Americans. So I guess, were you seeing that, you know, what were you seeing and what did you get out of that essay? But in terms of, do you think people are also reaching out to nonfiction as a way to understand where we are as a society now?
Yeah, I mean, Masha Gessen has certainly been a voice that I have turned to. I think Rebecca Solnit has also been a voice that I've turned to. And she's been, you know, has written a number of, to me, really sort of useful pieces for the New York Review of Books post-election. And, you know, particularly looking at sort of Putin's rise and the way that he's governed and what that, you know, might very well foretell for our future under Trump, and sort of what, you know, an effective resistance might look like. You know, we're in a moment where there's so many sort of unknowns going forward, but we also have, you know, we have history to sort of teach us, we hope. I think for me, Gessen has been a really important person to read to think about how I, just as a citizen, will move forward with this new administration.
Jabari, any books like that, any essays, even any poetry like that, that you refer to or look to for some sort of understanding or insight?
A couple of things. I mean, the Gessen essay, I agree with. One of the things that I really took away from that particular essay was believe the demagogue.
Mm.
Because we keep saying, well, that was exaggeration, that was the campaign. And I think her essay makes a really good point of saying, no, let's take these mm-hmm. words for, you know, at their face value. George Lakoff did an essay about being careful with language and don't use the language of your political opponents. Don't repeat it. That's not the best way to advance an argument. I thought that was a really valuable essay, sort of in the same regard. And in poetry, there was a piece going around. I hope I don't misattribute it. It's called Good Bones. And it's a poem, I think, by Maggie Smith, I think is her name. Really wonderful poem that kind of helps us also face what may be confronting us in coming months.
And listeners, once again, I want to turn to you and see, was there a book, a nonfiction or fiction, an essay, some poetry that moved you this year that you want to talk about? Please call us if there was. You can reach us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. You mentioned one children's book, Jabari. Was there another one that caught your attention? Because I think it's important to bring them into the conversation.
Sure.
And what makes for a good children's book? Is it the same thing as a good adult book?
Sometimes. I mean, if it's a picture book, I mean the illustrators really are the rock stars. You know, not to downplay the importance of the prose, but the story is so dependent upon the quality of the illustration. And that's certainly true with the book that I noted earlier. The second one's nonfiction. It's called How to Build a Museum by Tanya Bolden, and it's sort of a backstage look at the construction of the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture, from the long struggle to create it to once she handles the backstory in that regard, she then takes you into the museum where you look at specific artifacts and exhibits, and it's a really wonderful guidebook to an important new American cultural institution.
Just curious, with both of you, are you rereading any books? Did you reread any books this year for comfort, something that you have? I have here, I'm looking at my old high school copy of All the King's Men. That was the book for me, given the political climate. But was Laura and Jabari, was there something for you that you referred back to in this year or something that you kind of keep referring back to? Laura, I'll start with you.
Yeah.
You're off the hook, Jabari.
My time
for
is
now.
Come. Yes, I reread. I mean, there are novels that I reread regularly. I reread a French novel called Piano that I really love by Jean Echanoe, which really was sort of more for my current project than for post-election solace. But I think in addition to nonfiction, I mean, poetry is absolutely a space that I return to just for spiritual sort of bravery and nourishment. And so there were a couple of poems this year that I found myself reading again and again and again. And when I was sort of thinking about my recommendations for individual pieces, I kept pulling from BuzzFeed Reader, who I feel has like really been doing the Lord's work in recent years. And like Ada Limón's A New National Anthem, that was a poem that I kept coming back to again and again and again post-election.
How about you, Jabari?
Mostly essays. I find myself this year I revisited On Looking by Leah Papura, wonderful collection. Eulabissus collection. I can't think of the name of it, but it has this wonderful essay called Time and Distance Overcome, which is really wonderful. And most recently, I've been looking at collected essays by Ralph Ellison, James Baldwin, and Du Bois' seminal collection, Souls of Black Folk. Wonderful stuff.
We have about 30 seconds left, and I want to leave it on this note. Both of you, make your best arguments. It can be a busy time of year, but make your best arguments for why people should make time to read now.
I'll quote the poet Jack Gilbert and say, because we must risk delight, even in these challenging times. And what provides delight as consistently and reliably as good literature?
Well said. Laura?
Yeah. You know, I think just in a moment, we're talking so much about language and the power of language and precision. I think one of the most powerful things that any work of good literature does is to name the thing that they're seeking to name as precisely as possible in the most precise terms. And to me, that's just endlessly powerful.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming in and discussing the best reads of 2016. Jabari Asim is the editor-in-chief of The Crisis, the journal of the NAACP. He's also a professor of creative writing at Emerson College and author of several books, including Preaching to the Chickens, The Story of Young John Lewis. Thank you, Jabari.
My pleasure.
And Laura Vandenberg is a lecturer in fiction at Harvard University. Her latest book is Find Me, and she has a book soon to be out about Cuba, that's set in Cuba. Laura, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I also want to mention the WBUR Digital Bookshelf. It includes information on many of these books and is linked at our website, radioboston.org. Stay with us. We turn to the year in art. I'm Shira Springer, and this is Radio Boston.